Now, once again, here's Mark.
Well, good morning, everybody. 4 minutes after the hour of 10 o'clock. My name's Mark Salem, and we're here to be at your service. 9:60 a.m. every Saturday, 10 to 12, we talk about cars and other foolish things. So you're welcome to join us anytime you want, 602-508-0960. We've been here a long time. We know that it's a little slow the first 20 minutes, 30 minutes, and then everybody calls in the last 30 minutes of the two-hour program. So now's really the time to get in. We've got Dennis already. But if you'd like to call, 602-508-0960. Thompson Auto Repair in Mesa is the only shop in Mesa that I tell you you can go to and be safe, and they'll be nice to you, and there's a 99.9% chance you're going to be happy. They've been around since 1972. Brian and Thelma own and operate Thompson's Auto Repair. They're on Main Street just east of Stapley. They do a really good job. They're really kind people. They know right from wrong. They work well together, as most couples do in the auto repair industry. But all you have to do is stop by, shake his hand, and you'll understand why I think Thompson's is a great place to go. Dennis, good morning.
Hey, good morning, Mark. I have a 77 Corvette, and the last couple of years I've been having a little problem getting it through emissions, but I was able to take it to one of the emission places, and they were able to tweak it and kind of untweak it and get me through the year. But this year I'm at a dead stop, so I took it to my go-to guy, two of my go-to guys, which are both your go-to guys, and both of them told me that the car's too old, they don't have the equipment anymore to do anything with it. So I had to find another guy, and he's working real hard, and he's doing what he can. We changed the catalytic converter.
Wait a minute. What did it fail?
Oh, I don't have the, he's got the emission report with him.
Okay.
But I'm not exactly sure.
Okay. Well, that's the most important part of this discussion is CO, HC, or NOx.
Yeah,
And really and truly, all three of them have completely different repairs.
Yeah, and I know it failed all three.
Okay, so you have to fix the CO first.
So we changed the catalytic converter.
That was a waste of time.
Oh.
I'm going to assume if you passed all or failed all three, it's a CO failure. It's running way too rich. Lots of fuel going through. CO is sky high. HC is sky high. NOx. Now, it could be the other way around, as I think out loud here. Let me think. If I have low CO, then I have high HC, and then I have high NOx. No. If I'm trimmed good, I don't know. I just have to see it, but if you failed all three, then you almost always we start with CO, and CO is just the air-fuel mixture that's being delivered to the engine, and the tailpipe's screaming rich. So it probably had a rich O2 sensor code. It probably it may have had an EGR code. But anyway, the catalytic converter, and what else did you change?
We did tune up, changed the plugs, and adjusted the carburetor.
Okay.
And he was pretty confident, but it failed again. So he's got it back in the shop, and it's been a couple of days, and they're still working on it. So I'm just wondering, what do you think? What do you think I'm up against? Do you think a new carburetor would do it, or rebuild, or am I looking at something really major?
I'm thinking you ought to stop guessing. I'm thinking you've probably already spent more money than the final repair is going to be. I'm thinking that the catalytic converter, was that $50?
No.
Okay, you know it was hundreds.
Yeah.
Okay. And then the catalytic converter, it would be important to make sure that we made progress. But your emissions report shows what you did, and then it gives you some historical data. That's really what needs to be done. I'm going to guess that you aren't at 25th Street Auto. You aren't at Martin's at 16th Street and Osborne. You probably aren't at Blackwell's or Kurtz or action. And so I don't want to embarrass the shop that I recommend, but it is true. I'm going to agree that much of the equipment, the tailpipe equipment we used to have, we don't need anymore. Years and years ago, we went to check the codes. If the codes are there, fine. And if they're not there, you pass. So we're not really doing tailpipe anymore. In the old cars, we are. So the equipment, and it was very expensive to keep up and running. So I'm not quite sure. But I think, how many times have you taken it in for a retest?
Four times now.
Okay.
I paid twice.
Okay. Because each time you fail, you get one free retest, and then you fail,
yeah,
and you get another free retest.
I'm on the west side, so...
Okay. I'm thinking that we need to present the car in front of somebody who has lots of gray hair and who's been around the block and can look at your results, and I'm quite sure the results changed, and hopefully you have all three papers, all four papers, but I think they can look and see what it is that's causing the problem that we need to address. But I can guarantee you that we're going to have to start with CO, which is the carburetor's ability to mix air with fuel in the right ratio. Too much air causes the CO to drop. Too much fuel causes the CO to skyrocket. So we have this balance that we have to draw this horizontal line through. So
like I was telling you earlier, though, I've been having this problem for about 3 years straight, and it's been a carburetor adjustment, and then, you know, it ran badly through emissions, and I hate to say, you know, we would unadjust it and run it through the year.
Okay. Well, I can't tell you because you can't tell me. I have questions, and I can't answer your question until I know what my question's answered. So I, Dennis, I can't tell you what to do. There's only one adjustment external on the carburetor on that VET. It's the two air fuel mixture screws in the front side. And so I think what they're doing is they're shutting off the idle circuit by screwing those screws in, which also will make it rump and rump, 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 rump a little bit, because we're leaning it out. We're shutting off a lot of fuel. So you shut off a lot of fuel, and you go through and you do good. Then when you get back out, you back out those screws to make it run rich again, and that risk is that when you run rich, you're going to wipe out the cat. And obviously, that's either what happened, or somebody misdiagnosed it and said it was the cat. So I don't know. I think your best bet, the guy closest that I've got to you, is Billy at 25th Street Auto. I think you should call Billy. I think you should ask him if he wants to, shoot at this. But I can guarantee you there are shops in town that can fix your car. And even if we don't have vehicle emissions, it may take one or two tries. But the real, what's missing here is what'd you start with? What'd you end with? And what's been done? And then, after you have all that start and end with, then you know if anybody made any progress. The real sin here is you go in and fail, and then they do something. Then you go in and you get your free retest. Well, that's really important. Between those two, we need that information. And so, did we get better on HC or CO? Did we drop the NOx? Did we not drop the NOx? If it runs lean, then the NOx goes up, and the HC goes up, and the CO drops to nothing. So this is kind of like juggling three balls in the air. And I just only get advice I can give you is the very best advice I would give you is go see Billy, and he's close to you, or he's closer than anybody else. And Billy and Blackwell and Kurtz and Dave Martin, all those guys are guys that can fix it. But I think geographically you're close to Billy. So that's my advice is go get some help from him. Alrighty, I'm sorry, Dennis. If you want, you can go get the vehicle information, and here's what I want from that if you have it close by. I want your CO, HC, and NOx numbers, and I want you to put them in this order. 1, 2, 3, 4. First time, here's my HC, or my CO, my HC, and my NOx. Second time, 1, 2, 3. Third time, 1, 2, 3. Fourth time, 1, 2, 3. I'd sure like to see those, and that would kind of help me out. I, I've been involved in their mission program since day one. We actually got involved when they changed it from static at idle test to work cruise test. We actually had a dynamometer installed so we could do the cruise test. Your car is a Fred Flintstone car. It's been around for 100 years. There's really no excuse to not be able to find and fix the problem. Unless, of course, you don't have lots of experience on these older cars. And if somebody's guessing, they should have told you they were guessing. Or the responsibility really lies with you, Dennis, is you got to ask them, is this a guess or a fix? And if they say it's a guess, you say, okay, well, how much is the guess? Well, the catalytic converter is $300. Ooh, I don't want to spend $300 on a guess. So maybe I'll take it someplace else. Or do you have something else that you know for sure will make an impact? Don't forget, those yo-yo. One goes up, the other goes down. One goes down, the other goes up. We need to make a middle. But if you got a CO problem, the carburetor is more than likely going to be the problem. But putting a new carburetor on it is silly because that can be rebuilt and fixed. But you have to know what it is that you got a problem with in order to find and fix the carburetor internal problems. You have all kinds. You have wells, these little solder joints at the very bottom of the carburetor. When they start leaking fuel, that makes the CO rise, the HC rise. So you go in there and you put JB Weld on those two wells. JB Weld on those two plugs, boom, the leak stopped and everything's fine. So, and then if you buy a used carburetor or a rebuilt carburetor, you run the risk of ending up with a carburetor that's leaking. And it may have come from a state, the carburetor they rebuilt may have come from a state where there is no emissions. So, anyway, thanks, Dennis. Good luck to you. 602-508-0960, 602-508-0960, and we'll be right back. Twenty minutes after the hour of 10 o'clock, my name is Mark Salem, and you're welcome to join us, 602-508-0960. And, Eric, I'm going to be to you in about 20 seconds. This portion of Under the Hood is brought to you by Blackwell Automotive at 40th and Greenway, 40th Street and Greenway. I've known Tom for at least 20 years. He's a highly qualified technician, shop foreman, shop manager, shop owner. He's in the shop more than he's at the front desk, but he has good front desk people, good staff. But Tom's one of those guys that can do anything bumper to bumper. Plus, he can take your hot rod and take it from whatever level you want to whatever level you want to spend. He's a good fabricator, and he installs parts on cars that most guys, including me, wouldn't even try. So he would modify a straight axle and make it an independent front suspension, and a lot of us would probably pass on that just because of the risk associated, as well as that might tack. How did you say that? That might challenge us, our skills. So Blackwell Automotive, 40th Street and Greenway, if you're in that area, I would like to suggest that you try him. Eric, good morning. How can I help you?
Hello. I've got a 2007 Dodge Magnum station wagon with a 6.1 liter, 180,000 miles. I have a death wobble, a really violent shake, at 35 miles an hour and faster. It's brought on if I steer right, and it's calm if I have a sharp steer to the left. I have a whole list of things that I've kind of done, because with 180,000 miles, I went and checked all the rubber steering components and the ball joints, and a lot of those were worn, so I did replace those. However, it had no effect on the wobble. I feel the wobble through the seat and not the steering wheel. Do you have any more ideas for me?
Yeah, this is something that can be diagnosed in about a minute and a half. I mean, you just have to know what you're looking for. If you want to, you know, I'm not quite sure. It's a lot. The steering wheel is in one place, and the front end is left and right, left and right, left and right. That's what a death wobble is. So we have play between the steering wheel, and now the steering wheel could be firmly connected to the driver's side front wheel, but the linkage between the driver's side front wheel and the passenger side front wheel is sloppy, sloppy, sloppy. So we can control the driver's side, but that right front's going to whack, 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 and just wobble, 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 wobble.
Okay.
So I want you to try this. Did you do the ball joints?
I did end up doing a front end rebuild with everything except I did not replace the strut.
Okay.
Those actually seem to respond well. I did do the ball joints.
Okay, it's not struts. So you did the ball joints, right. And what else?
I've done the control arms, tie rod ends.
Okay. Try this. Does your wife like you today?
You know, today's a pretty good day.
Okay,
actually.
Good. So you're going to have her get in the car and set the parking brake, and you're going to lay down underneath the front of the car. Take your flashlight with you, and you're going to tell her to put her hands at 12 o'clock, her hand at 12 o'clock. And when you tell her, the motor's running, and she's going to simply take her steering wheel and move it one hand width to the right, and then back to center, and then one hand width to the left.
Okay, so and, like between 11 and 1 o'clock, right?
Yeah, yeah. She's going to go slow,
okay, got it.
And you're going to follow all the linkage. And so you're going to start on the driver's side, and I don't know if does your Magnum have rack and pinion, or has it got a steering box with a power steering? Do you know?
It does have rack and pinion.
Okay, so you're gonna go first to the driver's side tie rod, and it has two connections. It has an inner tie rod that you can't see, and an outer tie rod end that you can see. So you're going to look at the tie rod joint and make sure that the tie rod and the wheel move in complete synchronization. Then you're going to go to the passenger side and do the same thing. Then you're going to put your hand on the axle. You're going to put your hand on the axle itself, and you're going to feel if you feel any clunk in the axle. She's not moving. She's not driving. You're just going to put your hand on the axle as she goes back and forth. Then you're going to open up the hood and see if you can see where the rack is mounted to the bottom of the firewall. And if you can see the rack, and the steering column is going to be attached to the rack, then there's two big U-shaped mounting brackets, and in between the mounting bracket and the rack is a big rubber bushing. And so I'm wondering if the rack is moving left and right. So if the rack's not firmly attached to the car, then the rack will move left and right and cause the wobble. But this is an inspection that most gray-haired guys and experienced technicians could probably perform in less than 15 or 20 minutes.
Okay.
It's right, another thing you do is you know, just go take a drive and, I mean, teach your wife how to do it in a parking lot on a Sunday afternoon, and you just kind of have her do it in front of you and look to see if there's one wheel wobbling or both wheels wobbling. Because if it's both wheels wobbling, then it's a common attachment between the two is not the problem. But if one wheel's wobbling, then the outer tie rod or the inner tie rod end of that one wobble wheel is the problem. But this, on a 1 to 10 scale, this is the 3. As far as...
Okay, right on. Now, I did want to clarify also. I'm going to do everything that you recommend. I've been making a list the whole time. I'm doing all of those things, but I did want to reiterate, I'm not sure if you caught it, I felt it more in the seat.
Okay.
Steering wheel.
Well,
okay.
You can't have it both ways, though. A death wobble is something that's created in the front end, and certainly the steering wheel is going to, you're going to feel it.
Oh, okay, so the car violently shakes, I guess. I probably described that.
And it's okay, though, because when the front end violently shakes, it's kind of tough for even me to determine whether it's the steering wheel or the seat of my pants. So I commend you for seeing that there's a difference there. But sometimes when we have a really bad death wobble, I'm not concerned about that it's in the seat of my pants. I know that I can feel it through the steering wheel. I know it's related to the steering of the car. And so I'm going to ignore the fact that my butt's telling me there's a vibration.
2 minutes.
Got it. Okay. Awesome.
All right. Well, good luck. And, you know, if Mark at marksalem.com, let me know what you find.
Okay, right on.
Okay. Thank you, Eric. Thank you very much, and good luck to you. This is kind of the consumer part of my advice to you, is it's certainly okay for you to call somebody, a shop, and say, I've got what I believe to be a death wobble. What would it cost me to, and not Monday morning or Friday afternoons, what would it cost if I came by and asked you to have one of your technicians go with me on a ride, and I promise to only have him for 10 or 15 minutes, and I'll pay you for his time, just so I can show him what I've got, and then I'll leave the car and have you diagnose it. And so what is that going to cost me, the quick test drive as well as the diagnosis? What is that going to cost me? And I would imagine you're probably between 50 and 100 bucks. I don't know what's it's going to take to diagnose it, or if they're going to have to, you know, move stuff around to see stuff. I don't know. But then they call you with an estimate, and this is where the consumer comes in, where you say, okay, please, I don't want to pay for guesses, so you're 100% sure that these are going to take care of my death wobble, this or these. Yes, we are. Okay, I would like you to put the old parts in the new box and put them on the passenger side seat so I can learn from what you're telling me. And okay, so thank you very much. Again, I don't want to pay for guesses, so if you're going to guess, then the question is are we guessing with your money or mine? And these are all perfectly acceptable conversations to have with your shop. I can't tell you how impressed most shops are when customers come in with that kind of an attitude. They're doing exactly what a customer is supposed to do, and when that happens to me, we don't care. 602-508-0960. Okay, 34 minutes after the hour of 10 o'clock. My name is Mark Salem. Every Saturday from 10 to 12, we're here talking about cars. And I've got a couple of callers, but I want to tell you about automatic transmission exchange for a couple of seconds. Phil's been around since 1968. Phil and his shop are transmission experts. Let me explain why that's important. Here's the deal. If you understand how a transmission works, then you'll understand the new ones. The difference between the two is the triggers on the old ones were vacuum and throttle and just hard programmed shift points. Well, the new ones use electronics to make all that happen. So everything is electronic, but it's still doing the same thing. So we don't have vacuum, and we do use throttle, but we look at speed and we look at engine vacuum and we look at a lot of stuff, and they know that. So every transmission on a rebuilt, and he says that less than half of the transmissions that come in need to be rebuilt, but he says he has a dynamometer. Phil has a dynamometer that they can check the performance of the transmission before they put it in your car. That's kind of important, because if they made a mistake or there's a leak, they've shortcut that process where they give it to you. You drive it for a couple days. It's got a leak. Come back. They got to take the transmission back out. So that's kind of a nifty thing. 40th Street in Washington, the north side of the road, ATE Transmissions, and that's Automatic Transmission Exchange is what we call it, and that's Phil. And let's go to the phones, and thank you for waiting, Bob. Bob, how can I help you?
Another carburetor question, please.
Sure.
Why does my accelerator pump diaphragm keep failing? It's my second one in a year.
What kind of car truck is it?
It's a Weber two-barrel. It's a modification.
Okay. Well, is it leaking gas, or does it stop pumping fuel when you have a hesitation?
No, it leaks gas. I've got it in my hand, and the rubber keeps failing around the metal spring that tensions it, I guess, against the metal part where it pumps. But it's the rubber keeps failing. It's the second one. I was just wondering, is fuel causing this problem?
You're going to get some people that say, yeah, but it's been a long time since I've seen fuel cause any problems. Let me ask you a question. Let's start from the bottom of the accelerator pump and go up to the shaft. So the very bottom probably has a washer that fits kind of the inside of the skirt of the fuel pressure or the accelerator pump skirt, the rubber skirt.
Yes.
Okay. And there's a spring that sits up against that metal flat washer thing underneath the bottom of the accelerator pump.
That is correct.
Okay. And so describe the skirt to me one more time. Is it torn? Is it deformed? What is it?
It's deteriorated.
Okay.
I find little very tiny particles of rubber in the float bowl.
Okay. I'm not quite sure that I'm going to agree with your diagnosis. The passageway from the accelerator pump goes into the throttle body or the barrels of the carburetor. It's not squirted into the bowl. It's
correct.
Okay. So I'm confused on if the accelerator pump was coming apart, then we fill it from the bowl, but when we pump it, we're pumping it through a passageway that goes to the intake part of the carburetor. So I mean, we got gas coming in, but you're suggesting that this accelerator pump is deteriorating, and when it goes down, it's shoving rubber stuff back into the bowl, and I've never seen that happen.
I'm finding very fine particles in the float bowl. But having said that, it definitely the gasket or the diaphragm is definitely failing. This one, I think I put this one in like 6 months ago.
Okay. Well, I'd certainly change brands.
Do they make any of these things out of different components now, like silicone or anything? Do you know of anything like that?
Certainly, you could take the part number. If you bought it, you could take the part number and Google it and then use the word enhanced or changed or something like that. But I'm just kind of confused because what you're describing would be described by other people that the gasoline's causing the problem. But, we don't have, we have ethanol in our fuel and it's alcohol but, 99% of it is gasoline. So I'm just confused. And if the skirt is damaged, then yes, the accelerator pump, something's wrong with it. But if you're going solely by the pieces of black, whatever it is in the bowl, and that's the only thing you got, then I'm struggling with putting the two of them together.
Yeah, something's making the rubber to fail. Do you know of any additives to put in the fuel that might stop that, if in case it is the fuel?
Well, there's nothing that you can counteract the ethanol, the alcohol that's put in there. But like I said, it's one drop in 5 gallons, so it's not like it's gonna not be diluted. All we want to do is make it run a little leaner, and so we're adding a little ethanol. Alcohol cleans better than gas. So I don't know the answer. I don't even know a good import guy that you could take that to, but certainly if you go to marksalem.com, an accelerator pump is an accelerator pump. So maybe take it by a couple of shops. Where'd you buy the last one from?
Napa, I believe.
Okay. I think there's a place called BAP Auto Parts, British Auto Parts.
Yeah, I forgot that. They used to do Volkswagens.
I think I would go to a counter guy and look for the gray-haired guy and not the three-whiskered guy and just say, look at this, what do you think? That's what I would do. All right, I trust them. Okay. Okay, thank you very much. And I got to take a break, and I'm sorry, Ben, but you'll be first. I hope you stick around. Gil forgot to tell me that I was up against the time, and so I have to take a break now. So it's all Gil's fault. That's spelled G-I-L. That's his fault. So we'll be back in a minute. Welcome back, everybody. 44 minutes after the hour of 10 o'clock, and I'm going to do just exactly what I said. I'm going to go to Ben even before I do anything else. Ben, thank you for holding. How is it I can help you?
A couple of quick questions. I've got a 2002 Ford Thunderbird and a 2013 Volkswagen Bug, and both of them on the gas cap say to use premium gas. Do I really have to?
Okay, I'm going to change the question. Mark, how many vehicles do you have that demand premium gas? And the answer is just about all of them. Mark, do you put premium gas? Nope. Why not? Because it doesn't matter. So here, let me give you some science behind all of this. I want you to know that the explosion, we're talking about a millionth of a second, or a thousandth of a second, whatever you want to look at. So this is regular gasoline. When you stick a needle in a balloon, it just goes pop. Now, I want you to take the pop, and I want you to add a little bit to it. And here's another way I can explain it. In regular, one molecule of fuel ignites 10, and then 10 ignite 100. Okay? In a super gas, in an exaggerated way, one ignites two, two ignites four, four ignites six. So the burn time and the explosion between the two is measurable with very scientific equipment only on Mars. And so it has everything to do with the explosion. And it's, if on a 1 to 10 scale, if a regular has an explosion of 9, then super has an explosion of 9.2.
Not only that,
you have adjustable timing in both of those cars. You have a computer that watches for pinging and knocking. The computer has a knock sensor. The computer knows what to do. And if it starts pinging or knocking, the computer says to the timing system, back off one. And it does. And this is before you can blink your eye. This is in hundredths of a second. And so it listens and it goes, oh, the knock went away. Okay. That's what happens. So there's no possibility you're going to damage the motor. And, you know, all my Tahoes, the Camaros, even my son was mad at me the other day because he found we have a Camaro with a blower on it. This is just a monster motor. And he found a receipt in the car that had regular in it, and he tried to ground me. And I told him it was my credit card, not his. So the answer to your question is, and here's, do you have a wife?
Yes.
Okay. Just play the game. Just tell her to next time it gets low on gas, fill it up halfway, but don't tell you what. And you drive it. She drives yours. And you guys see if you can tell the difference. I guarantee you might guess once right, but you're not going to be able to pull off 10 out of 100. So.
Sounds good. Yeah. She's one of these people where she'll believe that sticker no matter what.
you know, I can fix cars, but I can't fix wives. If I could, I'd fix my own. You know what I mean? And here's another one I've used before. When you let go of a balloon, when you have a balloon in your hand and you pop it, it's just boom, okay? But when you have a balloon in your hand with the mouth not tied, and you just let it goes... See the difference?
Yep.
And so in an exaggerated way, that's the difference. But now, we have a Corvette with twin turbos. And yes, I put super in that because the motor's so doggone expensive. And my wife drives it with such vengeance that I think it's worth. And the car only gets 3,000 miles a year, so no one cares. But yeah, I do that. I don't even run it on my motorcycles. I don't use it in my lawnmowers. I don't buy any premium gas. I might buy 20 gallons a year, and it's usually for the Corvette. So,
second question, kind of similar.
Okay.
Oil changes. I've been using synthetics.
Okay.
Can I just use regular oil?
Yes, you can. The difference between all of this is intervals. Okay. How many miles a year do you drive on these two cars?
Probably about 15,000.
Okay. Well, if you put synthetic in it, you can go 9 or 10 months and do an oil change, and 9 and 10 months and do an oil change. If you use a blended oil, you're going to have to back that up to about 6 or 7 months. And then if you use a conventional oil, you're going to be at the 3,000 mark. So conventional is the 3,000. Then semi-synthetic or blended is 3 to 5. And then synthetic starts higher than that. And it goes from 7,500 to probably 12,000, depends. Mobile says theirs will do 15, but I'm a little uncomfortable with that. So, again, I have a Dodge pickup with the diesel. I change mine. I have a 540 synthetic. I buy Chevron. I put Chevron in everybody's cars, including my own. And I change it at exactly 12 to 13,000 miles. And I kind of like that because I don't have to deal with lots of oil changes. So there's a financial savings in using synthetic. There is certainly, there is one, you're going to do one oil change instead of three. You're going to get superior cold weather performance and hot weather performance. And a quick example. A conventional oil turns to a tar at somewhere around 250 degrees, 280. That's a serious overheat. A synthetic turns to a tar at 500 degrees. Now, it's kind of silly for me to bring this up, because if your motor gets past 300 degrees, it's toast anyway. and the fact that the oil will flow at 500 degrees really makes no difference. But let's look at the other side. The conventional oil is going to freeze to a solid, so it's called the pour point. When will it stop pouring out of a can? At about 15 degrees below zero, but a synthetic will pour out of the can at 60 below zero. Now, we only have a couple of days in Arizona at 60 below zero. So I want to tell you, you can go to a conventional, but you need to go to a 3,000-mile oil change interval, and that's going to cost you a lot more money than if you use a synthetic. So you can use either one. But there's the difference, intervals and protection, okay?
Well, I like the long intervals, so I think I'll stay with the synthetic.
And I would, too. One other thing, there's something on the oil cap of your cars. Just make sure your shop is abiding by, if it says 520, then you use it. If it says 530, you use it. Try to use, because that's going to, if you use the wrong oil, it may have a negative effect on your fuel economy. Because the thinner the oil, the less the engine works. The stress and load.
Can I sneak in another quick question?
Yep.
If I may.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the 2013 Volkswagen, the different places that I've taken it to for an oil change, I've always been told that it has a special oil filter, and they never have it in stock, and so that's fine. I hang around till they go buy it. I'm afraid that one day somebody's going to stick an oil filter on there that will fit but isn't the right one. Are you familiar with that issue?
No, I'm not, but I'll tell you what I'll do. If you'll send me an email, I'll check with Jeff in our parts department. I'm not familiar with that. I'm not familiar with that, but I can tell you this much. There's two companies that make every oil filter in the United States, Wicks and Champ. Now, there's a variety of differences between oil filters, which is the thread, the diameter of the thread, and the sealing gasket surface. So if somebody puts a wrong oil change or oil filter on your car, you're going to find out within the first mile, because you're going to be puking oil all over the ground. You're going to have a red light. Please don't drive it till you blow the motor up. You'll know. So
and then
you know, to find out if this is really necessary, why don't you call a couple auto parts store and say, hey, I got this VW and it's a 2013, and do you have an oil filter for that? And if so, what's the name brand of it? And if they say, oh yeah, we got a Fram, then those cross real easy. We sell Champs, and Champs is the two filters that, you know, the Wicks and Champ is one of the manufacturers as well. So we buy a filter that we can trace back to Champ, C-H-A-M-P. So
sounds good.
Okay,
thank
good
you
luck.
So much.
You're welcome. You're welcome.
All right.
602-508-0960. 602-508-0960. Larry Harker's Autos at 38th Avenue and Indian School. Why is that important? Because if you live in that area, perhaps you, if you have a problem, you should take it there. And here's why. Bob, the guy that runs the shop, and Ellen, his wife, is on the front counter. He's got this tenacity of a bulldog. He's got the tenacity I've rarely seen in other people. So if you go in and wave the red flag and tell him that nobody in town can fix this car, but you can duplicate the problem, he'll find it. He's done that too many times. Now, they do oil changes and air conditioning work and water pumps and hoses and belts. They do all that. But what Bob's really good for is diagnosing the car or the truck that nobody else could. So I would even venture a guess that he's better. Let me change that. I'm not as good as he is. I don't have the tenacity that he has, but I would venture a guess he's better than I am. So that it's easy. It's 38th Avenue and Indian School. They've been around since 1967, and they're good people, Bob and Ellen at Harker's Auto. 602-508-0960. I want to tell you something else about it, please. Folks, there are a limited amount of motorcycles and quads, side-by-side and four-seater recreational vehicles. The problem with the market, as far as Mark Salem is concerned, is you got this side-by-side that's $6,000, but by the time you get done, you have dock fees, freight, get ready, and all these other numbers, then sales tax. And it gets ugly. So your $6,000 can turn into $8,500. So there's a place in Casa Grande called Adrenaline Motorsports. They are the number one Can-Am and Kawasaki side-by-side dealer in the state of Arizona, and they rank second in the nation with respect to Can-Ams. They have really high customer satisfaction reviews on Yelp and Google, and it's family-owned and operated, and I went to high school with the guy that runs it. I've been around him since 1968. I like him. I have his cell phone number, and he's a good guy. So this is what's going on. People in the Valley area get this number. So if you'll call Adrenaline Motorsports in Casa Grande, this is what you say. I'm looking at this specific vehicle this year and this specific vehicle. These guys at Adrenaline are going to put the number with, it's going to be easy. It's the scooter you're buying or the side-by-side or the four-wheeler, whatever, and sales tax. There's no other pack. There's no other charges. There's nothing. There's no confusion. And John tells me he's able to turn about 90% of the customers. And he says, bring a check, and we'll have it ready for you when you get here. And you can write the check before you leave home, because it'll be good. He says there's lots of trailer kind of things out there where you buy a scooter, you get a trailer. He says you got to know that you're paying for the trailer. But I'll do that too. So if you want a trailer, sure. If you don't, then I'll give you the scooter with just the bike or the quad and the sales tax. So if you're going to be out there looking, Adrenaline Motorsports, I can't imagine for a minute, with as much as I know and as much as I've seen, that if you get an out-the-door number around here, they're going to be to Casa Grande, and it's a short drive, 25 minutes or so? So nevertheless, that's Adrenaline Motorsports. He's on North Piper in Casa Grande, and you can find his phone number in the Yellow Pages, or you Google Adrenaline Motorsports. And if you can't spell it, then just do the best you can. Actually, I misspelled it here, and my wife brought it to my attention. So 602-508-0960, 602-508-0960. Don't wait till the end of the show, because that's where it gets kind of sticky. So now's the time if you have a car question. Maybe you have a question about you and your wife argue about something. Like we talked to that gentleman before. His wife was adamant that if it says use super, then we use super. I'm not a marriage counselor. I can't help you with your wife. And husbands, wives, I can't help you with your husbands. But I can be the judge of the dispute. So if there's a dispute, I'm a pretty good guy that can probably answer that. So 602-508-0960. My name's Mark Salem. We'll be back in about 4 minutes. Well, welcome back, everybody. 4 minutes after the hour, 11 o'clock. This is not a paid programming. This is a paid programming. Let me explain something to you. You don't even know the name of my shop. This is my penance. This is my sentence. I have to do something nice for all the bad things I've done. So this car show is just all about you. It's not about me. I'm not self-dealing. I'm not doing any of that kind of stuff at all. I'm just telling you that I'll help you with your car problems. I have plenty of experience. I've been a master tech for a very long time, and I've fixed a heck of a lot of cars. And I know good technicians from bad because I've hired a lot of each. So that's the disclaimer I want to say. The second thing I want to say real quick is Gil is spelled G-I-L, and I'll tell you why I know that. It's because Gil, my engineer, the guy that actually flies the airplane, I'm sitting in the first class seat right now, and sometimes he puts me in the bathroom. But Gil is short for Gilbert, so you don't say to a guy that his last name or his name is G-I-L-L. It's actually G-I-L, which is short for Gilbert, in case you didn't know that. But if you want to complain about Gil, then use two L's, and that will really make him mad.
Yes, please.
And anyway, that's my commentary on that. We're going to go to Harry. And, Harry, I want you to know that he spelled your name on the board that I look at for the callers, H-A-I-R-Y.
Okay, Gil. It's Gil with two L's.
Yeah, that's what you do. You call and ask for Gil.
I know. Hey, you're a bad boy. I know that.
I don't care. You know what? If you walk down the lane of life in the center, standing on the center mark of it, you're not having as much fun as me as I bounce off the curves to the left and to the right.
Well, okay.
I'm not suggesting you change your life, Harry. I'm just suggesting that there is two ways to live your life, and mine's a lot more fun than maybe yours.
Well, yeah. Well, I'm just sitting up here in North where it's nice and cool and out of the heat. So I'm
okay.
Doing
good.
Okay.
Good, good, good. It was.
Hey, I wanted to,
go ahead.
Go ahead.
It was.
50. I wanted to ask you about the guy that called in. It sounded like he was talking about a Holley Weber progressive two-barrel carburetor.
Yeah, that's. Yeah, I think it was.
Yeah. Did he say what kind of vehicle he had it on, or what?
I don't remember. It was a. I don't remember. Maybe it was an MG or.
Okay.
I'm not sure, Harry. I'm not sure.
Okay. Maybe give you a little tip. I've had a little experience with those carburetors on BWs, and I had a Mercury Capri with a little V6, and it had that on there.
Mm-hmm.
And the problem was, because the car belonged to my mom and dad, and it kept every time she turned a corner, it would flood out. So what I did was I put a adjustable pressure regulator on it. That took care of all the problems. Same way on the VWs, too, because you never know, you know.
What the pressure is.
Yeah, yeah. And you just set it at, you know, like 2 pounds, run it hard. If it starts cutting out, you kick it up a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
But yep. I'm just wondering, if he was talking about little particle stuff, does he use any kind of a filter or anything?
I don't know. That was the confusing part to me, too. We were trying to tie an accelerator pump deterioration with some kind of contamination in the bowl, and I was just struggling with that because that circuit has a suck and a push, and the suck does come out of the bowl, but the push goes into the Venturis. So I was just kind of confused about that. But
I never had that problem as far as particles and stuff, but, you know, cutting out or whatever.
Yeah,
the pressure regulators work really, really well for
okay.
me, and I know other people that have used it, too.
Yeah.
Too bad Charlie Jones isn't in business anymore.
That's where we went in the middle of the night when you hurt your car and you needed to get home and get your dad's car home and not show that you just did something to the motor. But anyway, thank you, Harry. You brought up a good point. A fuel pressure regulator, and you described perfectly how to set it up. Is just start low and just creep it on up until you have gasoline on floorboard acceleration, and then you're home free. So thank you very much for that. H-A-I-R-Y. And that's from
okay.
Gil.
Boy.
I know Gil is. Ron, you're up next. How can I help you?
Well, thank you very much. Yes, I have a 2014 Chevy Silverado. And I'm 72 years old, and it kind of reminds me of when I was younger, like U-joints are going out. So if I'm driving my car and I stop, put it in reverse, there's a clunk. A big clunk, and then if I put it back up a little bit, put it in drive, there's another clunk. And I took it to a mechanic guy that I know, and he said that on these Chevys that there's an aluminum plate at the back of the transmission, but he said it has to go to a transmission place, but that probably is broken loose, and it's letting this drive shaft shift a little bit. Have you had other problems with this?
No, and I don't agree that we should jump to that. I think certainly I am an advocate of taking the drive shaft out and putting it and manipulating the joints with my hand. You probably have a constant velocity joint at one end of that or the other, and that's where you have a W joint. And so looking at a drive shaft and looking at the U joints, and I can tell you that I've learned from that because I looked at and I pronounced them fine and had that, I ended up eating that. So I've learned that I need to take him out. I think he might be talking about the extension housing at the back of the transmission. And the extension housing is where the drive shaft goes in, and there's a bushing in there. And I think he's thinking that the drive shaft's hopping around in the tail end of the transmission, the extension housing. But the bushing is there to make the drive shaft spin straight, and there's a seal there. And when the bushing goes bad, then it usually wipes out the seal, and you have a fluid leak there. So I'm not I didn't get to see it like he did, but I'm struggling. I think you have a bad motor mount or drive shaft, a U-joint. I think you have one of those or both. And all I want you to do is I want you to bring it to a stop, make sure there's nothing in front of your car like your wife doing gardening or anything like that. I want you to put it in drive and with your left foot hold the brake firmly and just kind of tap the throttle. Ruppa! Ruppa! I don't want you to floorboard it, and I don't want you to move it from idle to, you know, another 16th of an inch. If you've got a load mount broken, when you do that, when you throttle up and let go of it, there'll be a clunk as the motor lifts up and falls down. Then you're going to do it in reverse. Now, the drive shaft isn't even working at this point. So you're going to shift to reverse. You're going to sit there. You're going to close your eyes. Your foot's on the brake, and you go, ruppa. And if it goes, boom, boom, then you got a motor mount on the non-load side. So the load side on your Silverado is the driver's side, and the other side is not the load side. So we're testing both of those motor mounts as we sit and we throttle up in drive and not move. So that's how you check motor mounts.
Well, I'm in the car right now, and I stopped, and I have it in drive, and I'm revving the engine, but I'm not getting any movement at all.
Okay, I don't want you to rev the engine. In an exaggerated way, I want you to stomp the throttle and let it go. That's what I want you to do.
Okay.
So, and then you do that in reverse as well. If the clunk is there, then more than likely it's a motor mount. But you also describe this clunk when it's kind of moving, and so that's why I kind of agree that the U-joints need to be looked at. And as far as I'm concerned, the proper way to do that is take the drive shaft out. Is it a four-wheel drive or a two-wheel drive?
Two-wheel drive.
Okay, it's pretty easy to get the drive shaft out of that. But can you tell if this clunk is the front of you and is underneath your butt or behind you? Can you tell that?
Well, it kind of seems like it's in front of me.
Okay.
And when I had it with this other guy, that he was underneath of it, and I just had my foot on the brake and just put it in reverse and then back to drive and reverse and back to drive. And whatever he was hearing seemed to be coming from the front of the transmission.
The front?
Rear of the transmission.
Okay. All right, if that's the case, do you think you can pull it off by crawling underneath there?
Well, I could pay someone to do it, yeah.
Okay, well this is what, if he's right, then this is how I would test that he's right. I would get underneath, I'd have one of my technicians do that, and I'd get underneath and I'd put my hand on the extension housing. That's all I do. Is I don't know why he didn't do that. Put your hand there. Okay. Hey, Ron, are you ready? Make it happen. Clunk, 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 clunk. And he's got his hand on the extension housing. He'll know if that extension housing is bad. He'll know right then. So put it in reverse and do the same thing. So, I mean, it's that simple. It's that simple to determine whether or not that's where the problem's at. Is just put your hand on the extension house. Now, obviously, you're going to be laying underneath the truck, so you don't want to have somebody driving it that doesn't know where the brake pedal's at, and that whole test is with the brake pedal on. But it's a little dangerous to lay underneath there, but if you want to do it, then grab the extension housing. I got to run, but thank you very much for that question. That's something that I haven't gotten in a while. Fred, you're up next. How can I help you?
I've got a 2012 Dodge Ram
2 minutes.
Regular cab, short box,
okay.
1500. And I've got a brake issue with it. It's got 88,000 miles. And I noticed that it's usually only at idle speed. Like if you're in a parking lot maneuvering to park, you know, going from reverse to drive,
uh-huh.
Or whatever.
Yeah.
The pedal tends to get spongy. And usually you can pump it once and it comes back up. Now, driving around town, it seems to be okay. But anyway, I took it to a shop, and, you know, they did an inspection, and what they told me was, first they bled the ABS pump.
Okay.
They figured, well, sometimes they get debris in them, you know, shavings and whatever. Well, it was clear. They didn't find anything. Then they disconnected the master cylinder from the booster.
1 minute.
To see if the master cylinder was leaking into the booster. And it wasn't. Well, their diagnosis, what they came up with, was they think there is an internal leak in the master cylinder. And I asked, I said, well, what's that going to cost? And they said, well, it'll be $400 out the door. And I said, well, now, is this a guess? Or is it, you know, is it the... Well, they say, yeah, it's a guesstimate. and I told them, I said, well, I don't want to pay $400 for a guess.
Well, yeah, I just saved you $400, didn't I? Yeah, I think, first of all, yeah, you don't have symptoms that have to do with a master cylinder, okay? There's a lot of things it could be, but it sure as heck wasn't ABS. And I'm not quite sure I would like it if one of my technicians came forward and pronounced the ABS is okay because it did, and they pulled some fluid from it and it didn't spit metal particles. I think I'd be a little bit questionable about that. Here's the deal. If it master cylinder's bypass, and all you gotta do is go out there and get in it after it's been driven a while, just pull off the side of the road, get in the parking lot, put it, you know, in neutral, put it in drive, whatever. Put your foot on the floor like you're normally breaking it. Focus on where your foot's at, and if your pedal fades away, then yes, you have a bypass or you have a leak, and you haven't added any fluid, so you don't have a leak. So if it's bypassing, you're going to know it. What you're describing as you jockey forward, backward, as you get into the parking spot that you want to get, it has a booster on it, and it could be that you're exhausting some of the vacuum in the booster because your wife is making you go forward and backward 20 times to get into the spot perfectly, you know, centered. So I don't know, but if you only have the problem when you're constantly using throttle brake, throttle brake, throttle brake, and it only happens in a parking lot, I don't know. I don't know how many times it takes you to go forward and backwards. Most people, it's going to go forward maybe twice and backwards maybe once or twice.
Yeah.
And in the absence of any other symptoms, I'm not quite sure that I'd spend a whole lot of money chasing this one right now. You know, and here's the deal. If you have uneven brake pressure, the proportioning valve will scream and turn on a red light that says brake. Because it wants to see the same pressure going to the front and the rear. If all of a sudden we get front pressure and no rear pressure, boom, that red light's coming on. So no,
I'm not getting any of that.
Yeah, no red light for brakes. And no ABS light. Like I said, I do a waiting. And if you wanted to drive around with my grandkids, I'd let them go with you because I'm pretty sure right now you're not going to lose your brakes. So that's
all the winter stuff's okay. The pads, the fluid level was normal.
Okay.
You know, and
none of that's going to, you know, be.
What drew my attention to it was I got it washed here the other day. Well, the guy that parked it he drove it from the wash line to the detail area. He said, well, the pedal went all the way to the floor, and I thought it was going out in the street. I said, oh, okay, I'll check it out. Well, I drove it, and I've noticed it for some times.
Okay.
Sometimes.
All right. Okay, we're hashing old stuff again. Again, if you have uneven pressure, when the pedal goes to the floor, you're going to have a light on. That's all there is to it. It comes on. It's on. If you want to go guess, put your $400 master cylinder on there. That's certainly okay with me. The issue is it doesn't really make any difference. We can talk about this in a circle, but you have symptoms that only are when you're parking. If you want to guess on something, here's what you do. Drive the car and then park it. The next morning, get up and go out to the brake booster, and there's a hose there. And just gently rock the nipple, the barbed nipple, and when you pull it off, hopefully the booster will go, psst. That means the booster's good, too. So there's another one you can try. 602-508-0960, 602-508-0960. We'll be right back. Twenty-two minutes after the hour of 11 o'clock, my name's Mark Salem, 602-508-0960, 602-508-0960. We're going to get loaded up on calls. Now's the time to call. We got two open lines available. Strictly Diesel is at I-17 and Pinnacle Peak Road. He is Strictly Diesel. He's not going to work on your Mercedes-Benz. He's not going to work on your VW or Abbott. He's going to work on diesels, and he's specific with foreign and domestic light diesel trucks. But when you focus on that line, your doggone better be good, and he is good. So if you have a diesel and you have a problem, I-17 and Pinnacle Peak Road, you can also go to their website, Strictly Diesel, and look at some of the parts that you might want to buy for your Ford, your Chevy, your Dodge, or your import. one way or another, if you have a problem or if you just need service and you want to go to the guys that know diesels like no one else, then go to Strictly Diesel, I-17 and Pinnacle Peak Road. Manny, good morning. How can I help you?
Good morning, Mark. I have a 2010 Journey, Dodge Journey, and my light went off the other day, and so I had it checked out, and it came up back with a code PO84B, which indicates the transmission fluid pressure sensor switch, H, electrical circuit, was out of its operating range or had a performance problem for a predetermined period of time. Now, is that switch on the outside that I can get to, or is it closed in with the rest of the mess?
More than likely, it's going to be, well, I don't know. It's going to be one or the other. If you want to know, then get on the internet and find the switch and look at it. And the physical appearance of it will tell you where it's at. It could be in the valve body, which would necessitate pulling the oil pan. So if it's in the valve body, it's a temperature. It's going to gather temperature information. So I would assume that it's going to be within the transmission, but I don't know. Has there been any reason that you've hauled anything, or have you had a camper shell or a camper behind this Dodge or anything like that at all?
No, not at all. It's, okay.
Got any
just hit 100,000 miles, though.
Okay. Have you got any teenage kids?
No.
Okay. Okay.
No, none of those are driving.
Okay.
But anyhow, the error codes read says it's transmission fluid pressure sensor switch circuit range performance.
Okay. Well, here's the problem. The problem is replacing the sensor is a bad idea. The real issue is plug a scanner in there that allows us a wide range of data. You see, you're only pulling the code. The code tells you the problem is in Ohio. You got to find the city and the street and the address.
Right.
So you could very well be a quart low on oil or two quarts low on oil. There's a lot of things it could be. Maybe you've got a whole bunch of cat hair and dog hair in front of the condenser, and so the transmission cooler is being inhibited from doing its job because it's got, an old newspaper in front of it. There's a lot of things it could be. But the real question is just go drive it and check what the temperature is. What you want to do is I'd like to have it overnight. I'd like to drive it in the morning and see if I – because the temperature will be ambient temperature in the morning. And so then I'm going to drive the heck out of it and see if it gets into a range I'm uncomfortable with. But I'm pretty sure that we could find the range it's supposed to see. But I'm not real worried about this. You said it had 80,000 miles?
Just over 100.
Okay. I think the transmission in your vehicle and many others is good for 140,000 to 160,000 miles. So I'm not real sure that this is something that you need to panic over. What part of town do you live in?
Over here on 19th Avenue in Thunderbird.
Okay. I don't really have any, I've only got one transmission shop in all of Phoenix that I really can put my name behind just because many of them are brand new and many of them don't qualify to be on my list. And then many of their reviews and stuff like that. And then a lot of transmission shops are deciding to go into general repair because they can't make it fixing transmissions because they don't have the technical ability or the money to spend for scanners or to rebuild them. So they just everything gets a rebuilt transmission you order on a crate. So I would probably take – now, a general repair store, do you have somebody that does your oil changes that's into general repair?
Not really.
Okay. Give me that 19th Avenue and what?
In Thunderbird.
Okay. I'd probably go over to, I'd call Action Auto at Deer Valley and I-17 and ask Action Auto if they have a scanner that they could take a drive. You have this code and it involves temperature and it's in the transmission. Is that something you could look at for live data? If I left it overnight, could you check it in the morning and then check it later and see if something's wrong? And also, would you check the fluid and make sure I'm doing it right? That's what I would do.
Mm-hmm. Action Auto.
Action Auto. Northwest corner of I-17 and Deer Valley. Right there at the intersection.
Okey-dokey.
Okay? Thank you very much, Manny. Thank you very much. Good luck to you, by the way. Glenn, you're up next. How can I help you?
Good morning, Mark.
Good morning.
The company I work for has a 2013 F-250 four-wheel drive, and we use it for pulling a trailer. And two times in the last 10,000 miles, I got a high-speed wobble or a death wobble, I would say.
Okay.
Neither time was I pulling the trailer. And I took it to two different shops. One time I was getting tires, one time I was getting an oil change, and I asked them to diagnose it. And both of them told me that it needed a dual steering stabilizer. The truck's got 130,000 miles on it. It never did that before, so that tells me something is wore, and a steering stabilizer might help. But that's a Band-Aid, not a repair.
Not necessarily. Not necessarily. I don't agree with you. The steering stabilizer is a shock absorber. And if you take one end of the steering stabilizer off and you push it in and out and it feels like a fiddle, then it's lost its hydraulic capability. So I don't know if that's the answer to your problem, because a physical and a visual inspection of the front end would be necessary, and you'd have to know what good and bad looks like. But if you have two shops talk about the steering stabilizer, then you say to them, hey, are we guessing with your money or mine? If you put it on and it fixes my problem, I'm going to be really happy and give you a great review. But if you put it on and it doesn't fix my problem, I'd very much like to bring it back, have you take it off, and put my old one back on. By the same token, you can crawl underneath that or have somebody else crawl underneath it, disconnect this one end of the stabilizer, and just work it, and then if you can go to the auto parts store and tell them to pull one out, and you work it. If the one at the auto parts store, you can barely collapse that thing, and the one you have right now plays like a flute or something, like a trombone. If it feels like a trombone, then that's your answer. But I'm a little concerned about the mileage, because you got a lot of miles on it. But if you've got a death wobble, that's not a tough thing to diagnose. And all you have to do is look at those two guys and say, is this a guess or a fix? And that'll separate the men from the boys, because you're saying to them, in other words, if this doesn't fix my problem, I'm not going to be a happy camper. And so that's okay to do that. But I can't diagnose it over the phone. But I can tell you that if you want to check the steering stabilizer, I've just described how you could do that. You can stop by the auto parts store before you even take one end off and just operate the one at the auto parts store. Then take it back to the shop or take it home and take one end of it off and operate it and see what happens. So I got to go. We'll be back in a minute. Thirty-three minutes after the hour of 11 o'clock. My name's Mark Salem. The lines are wide open except for Dan. And 602-508-0960, 602-508-0960. And Dan, I'm going to take you before I take care of business. How can I help you today?
Hi, I have a 2012 Kia Rio that I'm first and only owner. Recently, the last couple months, I noticed it's losing oil. I added like maybe half a quart more or less. So I decided to take it to the dealership and ask them, because I don't see any leaks or smoke. Okay. I mean, oil burns or leaks.
Yes.
So I took it in, and they took a look at it, and they insisted on changing the oil. I don't know why, but they insisted. They said, we have to give you a fresh oil for us to, you know, check it out.
Okay
so I said, go ahead. I paid for it. They looked at it, checked everything. Everything's fine. There's no leaks, no smoke, no nothing. I went through an inspection for the emission test. There was no smoke, and yet they couldn't find out where's the oil going.
Okay.
So they said, okay, with this fresh oil, keep track of it and watch it, and we'll see where we go from here.
Okay.
So what do you think is oil?
Okay, well, let me explain. They're asking you to do an oil consumption test. So hopefully they brought it right to the full mark, and they're asking you, like at the first 1,000 miles, to pull the dipstick and see where it's at. And the next 1,000 miles, pull the dipstick and see where it's at. So this is called an oil consumption test. So it's really up to you to watch the dipstick. And you do not add oil till it's below the add mark. At or below the add mark. Never.
Mm-hmm.
You never add oil. So, at the add mark, you add a quart. Because between add and full is a quart of oil. So they're asking you to do that. There's a lot that can be going on in that motor that you're not going to see smoke, because you got a catalytic converter between the motor and the tailpipe. And so if we're using a little bit of oil, then it could easily, the smoke will be created in the catalytic converter and there won't be anything coming out of your tailpipe. So I'm not quite sure. But the leaking on the ground, you sure as heck would know. And the other thing is have you put spark plugs in it in a while?
Yeah.
Ever? Okay.
It has a new set. 3,000. 3,000 or 4,000 miles.
Okay.
Now it has about 75.
Okay, did you take the spark plugs out?
Yes.
Okay, well then you would have certainly known, as you had all of them out, you certainly would have known if one of them was blacker or darker or had some kind of a byproduct on the electrodes than the rest of them did. And obviously you didn't see that.
No, they're all normal use, okay. Normal 40,000 miles.
Okay, so we still have to do the oil consumption test in a car. Typically, all the manufacturers will say, kind of stupid, but they'll say that, you know, it might use a quart every 3,000 miles. I can tell you that most cars, that isn't true. Most cars will go far longer than that. But that is kind of the baseline, is a quart every 3,000 miles. So continue to do what they ask you to do. Check the dipstick on a regular basis. And maybe do it every 500 miles or something like that. Just set your triple odometer to zero, and at 500 miles, check the oil. If you want to take a picture of it with your camera, that's really cool. If somebody will do that, mm-hmm. You just have to make sure your picture we can see the level of the oil on the stick. So okay. That's what I would do.
I never had any issues with any car that uses that much oil for 33,000 miles.
No, I agree with you. I don't think 3,000 is an acceptable number. But, I mean, that's pretty self-serving to come up with a 3,000 mile. But I can tell you that I can do 10,000, 12,000 miles on my truck, and I never get below the ad mark. But it also holds 14 quarts of oil. So I can't answer your question, but if you wanted someone to answer the question, then have them pull all the spark plugs out and run a camera down inside there and look at the top of all the pistons, and the one that's going to be consuming oil is going to be different color than the rest of them. That's one of the things. Look at the spark plugs. That'll tell you everything you need to know. So it's only two possibilities. Mm-hmm. You're really using oil, or you're not using oil, but something is leaving you believe that you are using oil, but the real test is the oil consumption test, and I don't blame them for doing that. I blame them for not explaining it to you in detail, but it's up to you at this point to decide when that first quart goes bye-bye. So just do that, okay? All righty, Dan, thank you very much. I'm going to write you down for an oil consumption problem. There are, every once in a while, maybe once a year, I will hear someone I respect tell me that they changed the brand of oil they used in a customer's car, and that made a difference in an oil consumption problem, or it made a difference in a knock first thing in the morning, or it made a difference here, left, right, up and down. That happens maybe in my world once a year. So if you have an oil consumption problem, change the brand, see what happens. You can't change the weight, you just change the brand.
1 minute.
All the brands that you have are made by Mobil, Shell, Phillips 66, or Chevron. They all are. There's no such thing as a factory or a refinery that makes a lot of the oil. And I'm talking about oil that are mainstream oils. There's just no place. That same quart of oil can be put in 10 different cans, 10 different bottles. So, you know, it's good to buy a name brand oil, but I'm telling you, Mobil, Shell, Phillips 66, and Chevron pull it out of the ground and make engine oil. Everybody else buys it from them. They're the guys that have the infrastructure to pull it out of the ground and make motor oil out of it. So that makes a big difference. 602-508-0960. Real quick, Gil, I'm going to just talk about Kurtz Auto. Kurtz Auto is I-17 and Bell. He's been on my list for a long time. He's been in business since 1987. He does both gas and domestic or gas and diesel vehicles. He has ASC certified technician, and Jeff, Eric, and Kurt are all master techs. The two young bucks plus Kurt, that's a trio that you probably couldn't draw better at 95% of the car repair shops here in town. When you get three guys like the two young guys plus the old guy, you have the best of all the worlds. But he does oil changes as well. That's Kurtz Auto, I-17. And Bell, Northeast Corner, will be back. After the hour, 11 o'clock. If you want to get in touch with me, use my email address, Mark with a K, mark@marksalem.com. mark@MarkSalem, like the cigarette, .com. And if you'll leave me your phone number, I'll call you back because I'm going to have a lot of give and take. I need to ask a couple questions. And I call from a block number for obvious reasons. So usually I'll leave a message and say, hey, I'll call back in the next half an hour or something like that. But just give me year, make, and model of the car, and let's talk symptoms. Year, make, model, and miles, and then let's talk symptoms. I'm not real interested in what the three-whisker kid at the auto parts store said. I want to talk symptoms because that's going to funnel me into the repair ultimately. Dan, or Mike, I'm sorry, Mike, how can I help you?
2004 Lincoln Town Car. I'm going to replace the AC compressor and the receiver dryer. I want to recharge the system. I think I want to recharge the system with the ultra synthetic R134A.
Okay.
And can I recharge a fresh system with this stuff fully?
Well, I'm not real familiar with that particular synthetic Freon. But what I would be concerned about is what other changes are you supposed to use? Is the orifice tube going to be properly metering that Freon at the same as the other Freon? Is the oil in the compressor compatible with this other refrigerant?
All of those are issues, and I'll give you some insight. So I'm going to change the receiver dryer, and I don't understand how drilling a hole in it, draining the oil out. When you buy R134 in a can, it has oil in it, and the compressor also, a new compressor has oil in it. And if you change the orifice tube, they say you got to add oil, and then...
Okay, nothing you're saying is right. Nothing.
Okay, good.
Nothing you're saying. I've never drilled a hole in a receiver dryer in my life. And
no,
compressors.
Drain the old oil out and replace the same
That's a silly thing. Why don't you find that in a service manual? And then if that's the case, I'll give you $100. It's not. Nothing you've said is the truth. First of all, the orifice tube doesn't drip oil. It has nothing to do with engine oil or compressor oil. Number two, drilling the accumulator is a crazy thing. That's just a crazy thing. And compressors don't come with oil. You have to read the directions. I know that's tough for us guys to do, but you have to read the directions. It says drain the old compressor. It has 4 ounces. Then look at that compressor, the new one, doesn't have any oil in it. And so if you pulled 4 out of it, then put 4 in this one. There's going to be a process that lets you put the same amount of oil. Now, when you do the receiver dryer and the orifice tube, oftentimes we blow the oil out of the evaporator and out of the condenser. Well, then we might add an ounce of oil to each one of them. If you put too much oil in it, it's not going to work. And getting the oil out is pretty doggone difficult. So I'm not quite sure what this new refrigerant is. I think you're going to... I don't think I would do it. I don't think I'd even let my guys work on that car because whatever happens is going to be reflected on us. And I don't want to pay for a compressor because you had me put some refrigerant that I'm not familiar with. And I'm not quite sure what I understand the synthetic. Synthetic in the oil means it's man-made. And so I don't know what the synthetic in refrigerant means. Second of all, you have one chance. You have a 1 in 10 chance of even getting close to adding refrigerant. You're not even going to get close. So you should at least hire somebody. If it calls for 2.1 pounds of refrigerant, you should get somebody who has the equipment necessary to meter that exact amount in your refrigeration system. So I'm not quite sure where you're getting your information, and I'm not saying it came from your mouth, but whoever's giving you information about what you're going to do is just wrong. And they're sending you in the wrong direction. And their skill level and their experience is very obvious to me when we start talking about drilling holes and stuff from the air conditioning system. We don't care if the accumulator's got 2 more ounces than it's supposed to. No one cares. Nobody cares. That oil's not moving anywhere. So I just don't understand. But anyway, got to move on. Automotive Dynamics in Sun City has been around a very long time. Chuck Nide started that place in 1982, and Chuck and I have known one another since 1968. They have really great staff and technicians, but more important, Derek, the son, has decided not to pay a commission or a percentage of your repair bill to the technicians or the managers. Therefore, they won't sell unnecessary parts or repairs. We're watching that. My industry is watching that. How is that working? Can you keep good techs? Do they make a reasonable amount of money, or certainly in the middle of the market? And how did that affect your sales or not? because our technicians are really supposed to look at stuff that might be wrong with your car, and I'm sure that's happening. But one way or another, there's only one shop in Sun City, and I think it's Auto Dynamics. Let me explain about the best car repair shops that I have on my website, which is marksalem.com. It's written in there that if you have a problem with one of my shops, I want you to file a nice, keep in mind the word nice, complaint with the Better Business Bureau. The Better Business Bureau will investigate it, and more than likely that technical automobile complaint will go to the Auto Advisory Committee. I formed that years and years ago. So all these guys are in there, and they all have different levels of expertise. Transmission guys, front end guys, paint and body guys, general repair guys, engine guys, performance guys. It's a well-rounded. Now, if the Auto Advisory Committee tells the shop to make a refund or fix your car and the shop doesn't, Mark Salem will. If they tell the shop to give you a $500 refund and the shop doesn't do it, I will. Up to $5,000. That's the cap. If they tell the shop to fix the transmission and the shop doesn't, up to $5,000, I will. I've never had to do that since 1988. Never. Now, I've come close twice. But the shop finally came through. The shop fixed what they were supposed to do, made the check out to whatever they were supposed to do, and the dust has settled. They're still on my list, but we have an understanding that's a little tighter than the rest of the guys. So I'm putting my money where my mouth is. And as you well know, I'm not sitting here talking about my shop day in and day out. I'm here for you. I'm here to give you the best advice I can, and that's my job. If I'm wrong, I'm wrong. Let me give you a real quick example. Hold a call just for a minute. I'm taking a little bit of flack about nitrogen, and I don't sell nitrogen, and I don't understand why that's so important. First of all, the nitrogen in your hand is 79%, and they're going to move you to what, 90, 95%. And they're using the idea that jet airliners are landing with nitrogen and NASCAR uses nitrogen in their tires. That's true. But your wife isn't going to land an airplane that weighs multiple hundreds of tons. And your wife isn't going to drive, your kids aren't going to drive a car like NASCAR. I'm just saying it's not something that I want to market. Now, a couple of shops have taken issue with that. And I agree with them. They're saying, Mark, we have a demand for it. The people want it. They bring their cars in, they have the green valve caps, and they want us to top it off. So we're providing a service. It's no different. We're not representing the benefits of it. We are just filling the need. And then one guy says, just like a gun shop and just like somebody who sells cigarettes, we're not deciding whether this is good or bad for you. We're just providing a service. They're right. I'm wrong. I think both sides of the issue are worth merit. If you're going to sell nitrogen because you have a customer request for it, then yes. If I did, I probably would. But as far as the actual benefit from the customer, I don't see one. Other than maybe comfort. And if you want to spend for comfort, it's okay with me. Anyway, Gil, who we got? Gil?
Oh, we got Randy.
Randy, good morning to you. How can I help you?
Good morning, sir. All right, I'll try and make this quick. 2006 Jeep Grand Cherokee transmission over temp light.
Okay. It's the first thing you want to do is make sure that you check the oil in exactly the right way that your owner's manual, mm-hmm. or most of the time it's written on the dipstick. So somebody has to have done that already?
Well, yeah, let me actually go a little bit further. I've had it to the dealership and I've had it to other places. The question is coming down to whether or not the transmission temperature sensor is bad or the PCM is bad or both. Is there a way to check either of those?
Well, normally we can plug in a scanner and go drive it and we can watch your light. And if we see the, let's pretend with just stupid numbers, okay? You drive it and it's 100 degrees. And you drive it, and it's still 100 degrees. And 3 miles, 4 miles later, all of a sudden the light comes on, and it's still 400 degrees. So what we're seeing is we're seeing what the PCM is seeing. So if okay. it's just 100, and it's never changes from 100, we know it has to heat up. So the sensor is probably bad. The same token is if we start it up first thing in the morning, and it shows it's 320 degrees, and then the sensor is bad. But if we, there's a variety of things that we use to analyze that. Where do you live?
I'm up at North Phoenix. I'm down the street from Kurtz.
Okay. Well, around the corner is A&S Transmissions. He's not on my list because he's too busy, but Alger, who owns A&S Transmission, and A&S stands for Automatics and Standards. Alger worked for me in 1978 as a gas station jockey, and I love him like a son. He is one of the finest kids that's ever worked for me. I had a lot, but he's one of them. Here, I'll tell you the story about Alger real quick. He's 16 years old, and he says, hey, can I use the hoist on Sunday? And I said, sure, what are you going to do? And he says, I'm going to take the automatic transmission out of my Nova and put a four-speed. And I rolled my eyes, and I go, and let me tell you something, Alger. If that's cars on the rack on Monday morning, your ass is grass. I am. You better be done, buddy. Do you have the pedal? Do you have the shifter? Do you know where to cut the hole? Do you have the cross member? Do you have the drive shaft? Yes, 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 yes. I said, okay. He says, I'm going to be here early on Sunday morning. I said, fine, but I'm just telling you. So this is a true story. I don't know. It was like noon. My wife goes, there's somebody outside the house just laying rubber up and down the street. So I go outside, and it's Alger. He's driving his Nova, and he's at my house burning rubber in his new manual transmission. Well, he's morphed into one of the great shops, and Kurt uses him a lot. He's really busy. It's going to take you time to get in there. But I want you to tell Alger, I need a window, buddy. Tell me when you want me to bring it in, and then I want to know if it's going to take 24 hours to diagnose it, and then I want to know what the fix is.
Yeah.
So
yeah, it's one of those that we can drop it off overnight, so we're not worried.
Yeah, that's what I would do. I'd take the A&S transmission. He's not on my list. He's too doggone busy, and he said the last thing I want is a bunch of more customers. He says, I'm having a tough time handling my own. Plus, he does lots of wholesale work as well. So, but he's a good guy, and you live right around the corner from him. Now, you can take it to Kurtz. Those two young bucks that neither one of them has whiskers on their back, between Eric and Jeff, they'll figure it out. But Kurtz is a good place, too. Okay?
Okay, perfect.
Okay, thank you very much. Thank you. TOT Kurtz and A&S. I write notes because people call me and stuff. Let me tell you something about Mark Salem. My head has a hard drive and RAM, and sometimes my RAM gets overloaded and it pushes on my hard drive. So you have no idea what's going on behind the scenes, but I've got a clock. I got people talking to me in my ears. I've got paperwork in front of me. I'm trying to answer the calls, and I'm doing the very best I can. So if I fall down, you have to forgive me. We already talked about nitrogen. That's an important consideration. But I'm not going to fault you if that gives you comfort and you find somebody who will top off in the nitrogen in your tires. God bless you. And I'm not saying that's a bad deal. It's kind of like whether you buy Valvoline or Quaker State. It's just one of those things that's not a big deal. And you don't want to go to your shop and tell them, I've got a front end wobble and I've checked A, B, C, and D. Because that's all there is. So you missed it. So if you want to direct this repair, this diagnosis, then this is what I say.
1 minute.
You got $125 an hour. I'll do everything you tell me to do. What do you want me to do first? Well, I want you to do this. Fine. I'll do that. And this is at $125 an hour. If I can do it in 30 minutes, I will. But if you want to direct the repair, you're going to be responsible for the success of the diagnosis. And if you want to tell me that I've already done 1, 2, and 3 and I want you to do 4, you have to accept that responsibility as well. So if I say it's not 4, then you messed up on 1, 2, and 3. Please do yourself a favor. I'm not telling you what to do. I'm telling you what makes it easier for you to do. If you want to get your car fixed, talk about the symptoms. Tell them what you got. Maybe insist on a test drive real quick. Let me take a technician. I can duplicate this. I can make it happen. And then I'll show them how to make it happen, and I'll slide over in the passenger seat, and he can drive it. That's what we want. We want to do symptom analysis. That's the best way to fix your car. Not you telling us what to do first, second, and third. See you next week.